The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Good evening, everyone. A good Chaydish and a good Yor to everyone. Kfeir Harabonim, the Rebbitzins, my Rebbitzin, all dear friends. In the 1500s, Lithuania was emerging as a Torah center. However, owing to its tiny population, it was dwarfed by the communities of Poland and Western Europe. By the 1600s, and going into the 1700s, its Torah community eventually had grown to equal the great Jewish communities of the West and to attain international fame. Its contribution to Torah scholarship became enormous. It was against this background that a giant amongst giants was to be born, an individual destined not only to become the greatest authority of Jewish law in all of Lithuania, but also a Maor Hagola, a light unto the entire exile. It was in the year of 1720, in the ancient city of Vilna, capital of Lithuania, known as Yerushalayim Delita, Rabbi Eliyahu, the son of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, was born. This is the individual that was to become known as the Vilna Gaon. During his lifetime, he was to write extensive commentaries on the entire Chumash, on the Nach, notes on the entire Mishnah and Talmud, on many, if not most, of the Sifrei Tanoim V'Amoraim, the writings of our early sages. He would then write an enormous, comprehensive commentary on the entire four sections of the Yosef Cairo and the Ramesha Isserli's massive Shulchan Aruch, in which he would deal with thousands, if not 10,000s or perhaps even millions, of complexities dealing in Jewish law and principles. He wrote extensively and very deeply on Hebrew grammar. It is reputed he wrote some 40 volumes on Sisrei Torah, which is popularly known as the Kabbalah. And the style of writing was the ultimate of perfection, highest standard of Hebrew grammar, with not one extra word or one extra letter. In addition, he was a giant also in the secular wisdoms. He mastered science, mathematics, geometry, and his disciples testify on him that he even had a thorough knowledge of the science and theory of music. History records when he was a young man and he visited Germany, it was either in the city of Hamburg or Berlin, it became known that he was very adept in mathematics and geometry. A professor visited him. They discussed a number of problems, and the next day a few professors came. This carried on for a few days until the greatest professors of mathematics of Germany came, and they asked him a problem which they were pondering for many, many months. He drew one diagram which was the solution to the problem. Then he quickly made his exit from the city because he was a person who shunned high profile. As great as he was in wisdom of the Torah, so was he as great as a person and individual. His piety equaled his wisdom, His wisdom equaled his piety. He was a medakdek b'mitzvahs b'chol mitzvah shebetorah. He fulfilled scrupulously all of the mitzvahs of the Torah, whether in his dealings and interactions with people or his dealings with the Almighty. For this reason, he was not only known as the Gaon, or also referred to as the Gro, which meant the Gaon Rabbeinu Eliyahu, but he was also called the Chosid, the highest title and tribute that could be given to a person. His Beis HaMedrash in Vilna for centuries was referred to merely as the Chosid's Klois. I once saw a responsa from the Chai Odom, who was a Bechutin to him, where he writes, "Fasho'alti as a Chosid." I've already asked this question to the Chosid. The Gaon held no public position, which was commonplace in Lithuania. Torah was not limited to professional occupation, nor was it the exclusive right of the Rabbonim and the Rosh Yeshivas. It belonged to all of the people. I've mentioned the story many, many times, that a letter was found in the 1600s that was sent from Vilna when they were trying to get into a certain association of Rabbonim in Poland. And at that time they had not known of Vilna, and they didn't want to accept them. They wrote, "We'll have you know that besides our great Rabbonim and our great Rosh Yeshivas, but this is not a kunz, a chap. A Rav has to be a Talmud Chochem, he has to pask in Shilas. A Rosh Yeshiva has to say Shurim. But we'll have you know that we have at least 300 Balabati, craftsmen, artisans, laborers that are bekeem, that have expertise in the Talmud Bavli and the entire Talmud Yishalmi." When they heard that, they allowed Vilna to join. And this was commonplace that in Lithuania, the love of the Torah was so great, and everyone wanted such a great part of it, that not only you had workmen in Balabati that learned, but that were Gedele Hador, the greatest of the generation. The Chofetz Chaim also held no public position. He always claimed, "I'm not a Rov." He never would dress in rabbinical garb. The Chazon Ish held no public position. The father of Reb Lezer Telzer was a brandy maker. And when he used to walk into the Volozhin Yeshiva, the great Reb Chaim Volozhin would stand up for him. In 1801, shortly after the death of the Gaon, his greatest disciple, Reb Chaim of Volozhin, opened a central yeshiva under the influence of the Gaon, which was a new concept at that time. Until then, learning at that level was basically on a semi-private basis. Volozhin Yeshiva was to last almost 100 years and to close by the Russian government, and was to become the model for what was known as the modern Lithuanian yeshiva. In Yiddish it was referred to as the Mama von alle Litvische Yeshivas. From this yeshiva emerged Torah giants that built other yeshivas, and as their disciples also did. Because of this, tiny Lithuania emerged during the century before the Holocaust as the greatest Torah center in the world. Poland had 3.5 million Jews. Russia had 3 million Jews. There was Germany, there was Hungary, Austria. Lithuania had some 200,000 Jews. There were great yeshivas in other places. Hungary boasted a Pressburg yeshiva. Poland boasted a Lublina yeshiva, international repute. Germany boasted a Hildesheimer yeshiva. Little Lithuania boasted some 20 yeshivas of international repute that would attract students from all over the world. There was Volozhin, Mir, Ramalis, Slonim, Lomsh, Kelm, Slobodka, Tels, Radin, Lida, Ponovich, Nevada, Kamenets, Grodno, Slotsk, Kletsk, Baranovich, and on goes the list. It was the survivors of these yeshivas during and after the Second World War that brought Torah to the shores of Eretz Yisrael in America. This was all under the influence of this individual, the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon, in the mid-1700s, decided that he wanted to go and live in Eretz Yisrael. He was going to travel there alone, become settled, and then bring his family over. He therefore wrote a letter of appeals, guidance, instruction, divrei makoshes, musar vahadroches, to his household. Specifically, directly was written to his wife and part of the letter to his mother. But he includes in the letter his sons, his daughters, his sons-in-laws, his brothers, and their children. As a matter of fact, the journey was aborted. He returned home without reaching Eretz Yisrael, and he never revealed the reason to any living being. His son writes that there was everything the Gaon did, Shomayim, heaven agreed to, except three things. And one of these was his desire to go and live in Eretz Yisrael. He had an enormous love for the land, and he wanted to settle there. He never fulfilled his dream, but his disciples did. They went and they became the Aliyah HaRishayna of the Yishuv HaChodosh from the Ashkenazim. The first settlers in modern times, which was then referred to as modern times, to settle Eretz Yisrael, in particular in Yerushalayim, of European Jewry. There was already a Sfardische Kehillah there, but they were the first Ashkenazim. And it's for that reason that in Yerushalayim is basically prevalent the customs and the rulings of the Vilna Gaon. In order to study this letter, we have to bear in mind who was the writer, when he wrote this, some 250 years ago, almost 20 generations ago. He was writing this in Vilna. The level, the standard of his household, and that he is writing this particularly to his household, not necessarily for everyone. It's very worthy to note that if one would want to write a letter not knowing how long it will take him to return, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, and he wants to caution and instruct his household to carry on the standard of Torah that he knew, and you can't put all of the mitzvahs of the Torah into one short letter, so you'd have to choose what you feel is the most important. So what would one write about? Especially someone like the Gaon. He could write about Emunas Hashem, have deep, great faith in the Almighty. He could write deep thoughts, Sod Hashem, the secrets of the Torah, or about tefillah, the davening, which is considered going into the heavens. Or he could write about tefillin and tzitzis. The Gaon himself would wear talis and tefillin the entire day. Or about mezuzahs, which he wrote extensively on. Or perhaps he would write about forbidden foods, the velas, treifas, shkotsim, varamoshim, that one has to be careful not to take into his house. Anything that is not kosher, heaven forbid. Or to watch out for bugs or worms or milchiks and fleishiks or impure milk. Or perhaps how to be careful on Shabbos when you're preparing the food for Shabbos. Or the mitzvahs of the Yom Tovim, the shofar, the sukkah, lulav, esrog, matzah on Pesach, chometz on Pesach. And the Gaon was scrupulous on all of the mitzvahs of the Torah. And he wrote volumes on every mitzvah. Or perhaps even since he was such a great Baal Kabbalah, a Kabbalist, perhaps all of the customs of Kabbalah that the ancient Kabbalists and the modern Kabbalists are so involved in. The wonder of this letter, that not one of these things which I have mentioned is written about or even implied in the letter. He begins the letter by writing that his wife and his mother should not suffer any pain from his absence, like they promised him that they would not. He says, after all, I'm not leaving under duress. How many people have to travel and they stay away for 6 months or a year or 2 years because they have to go out for money? He says, Baruch Hashem. He says, I'm not leaving under any duress. I'm doing this all because of my free choice, and I'm healthy and well. And where am I going? I'm going to Eretz Yisrael, the land where even Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to give his whole life to go to, where every Jew wants to go. And he promises them, Imeskel yeis b'Yushalayim v'rakodesh etzel shara shamayim avakesh ba'adeh ka'asher iftachti. He promises his wife and his mother that if I will be zeicher to come to Yushalayim and to the place of the Beis HaMikdash, I will say tefillas there for you. So please do not be upset. Do not miss me too much. Be happy. Rabbi Chesko Sauna, the Chevener Rosh Yeshiva, writes on this point where he said that to his mother, like you promised that you would not worry about me, that if he had not extracted a promise from his mother, he might not have gone because of the mitzvah of kibud ein, kveid ein, of honoring one's mother. Then he goes to a major point, but he says that it's all important, for a person to have clear focus into what is important in life and what is not important. What is important in this world and what is not important. Our sages say that this world is an antechamber. The next world is a palace. This world is a world of opportunity to prepare yourself in order that you may enter the great palace of the Almighty. The pleasures and the peace, the simcha, the nachas of one little minute bit of that palace is greater than all of the simchas of this world. And therefore he beseeches his family and he appeals to them, do not waste your energies. Do not waste your time. Invest your energies in spiritual pursuits. Do not let life slip by because you have pursued materialistic objectives. And furthermore, The materialistic objectives you will pursue and pursue, they will never satisfy one. It's like drinking water that is salty. Chazal tell us, Yesh Lemona, Reitze B'Masayim, whatever money you have, it is the nature of the person that he will want more. His intention was not, heaven forbid, to negate this world. They tell on the Vilna Gaon that when he died, he was dying, he started to weep. And his disciples asked him, why are you weeping? We could understand why other people, but why you? He said, I am weeping because I'm leaving such a wonderful world. He said, for a few pennies, a few cents, you can buy a mitzvah, you can give tzedakah, you can buy tzitzis. Do you know what the reward is for that? Azat higher welt, such a wonderful world, that's why I am leaving. Why I'm weeping? Because I am leaving this world. Because after one leaves, you have no further opportunity for this. The story goes, and this I heard from my Rebbe Rav Gifter, that there was once a businessman, a wealthy businessman, and he had traveled from the West, from Germany or other places, into Lithuania, which was right on the border of Russia, on business. And he came into an inn, a lodge, and it was a cold night. And he comes into his room and he hears next door a beautiful, beautiful song. Someone chanting and learning. And he went to the innkeeper and he asked him, who is this man? And he said, that's Rabbeinu Eliyahu from Vilna. He knocked on the door, he came in, and he saw the radiance, and he saw the simcha. And he asked him, Rebbe, teach me also that I might merit the world to come. And the Gaon answered him, you asked for the world to come, which is the elusive world. This means that this world you already have. No, he says, I don't have this world. He says, I travel, I don't see my family, I'm snowbound, I have tzoras. He says, if you don't have this world, how do you expect to have then the next world? We see from here that the Gaon was teaching us how one can live in both worlds. This brings to mind what our sages write under Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma. He was approached once by a person who offered him elef alfei dinei zov, 1,000,000 pieces of gold, if he will leave his city where there was Torah and deeds and come to live with us. And he said, no, not interested. And when they asked him why, he said, it's not a good investment. But I'm offering you 1,000,000 pieces of gold. He said, Bishas betiros in shalodom. When a person leaves this world, ein malavin lei kesev lei zov, v'lei avonim tevis v'lei magolias. He is not escorted by his gold and by his silver and by his precious stones or his pearls. Ela Torah umaisim tovim bilvad. Only his Torah and his deeds go with him. So why should I give up my Torah and deeds for your pearls and your precious stones? And the Barambi Prague asks, why is it that a person doesn't take with him his gold and silver? Good question. If he can take his Torah and mitzvahs, why can't he take his gold and silver also? He said, from here evidently, we learn evidently, because the gold and silver is not his. Li hazov veli hakesef. Kodesh Baruch Hu says, it's mine that stays with me. It was given to you to use. You leave, it's like when you go into a hotel, please don't take the towels with you. They're given to you to use. But why do you take your Torah and mitzvahs? Kodesh Baruch Hu said, that's yours, that's not mine. Take the Torah and mitzvahs with you. From here the Maral says, we see that the material wealth is not yours. Spiritual wealth, even the Almighty cannot take that away from you. There was once a story of one of the early Rothschilds. Someone asked him, "How much are you worth?" He said, "How much am I worth? I'll look into my book of stockers, my charity book, and I'll tell you how much I'm worth." He asked, "But what about all of your other possessions?" He says, "I own mines in Africa. If there's a revolution, the mines go. I own property in London. If there's a war or depression, I lose it." He says, "Those are here today and gone tomorrow. But my stockers, even God cannot take that from me. That goes with me." And therefore, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma was a good businessman. He says, "What should I give you, my Torah and mitzvahs, for your precious stones?" And this is what the Gaon was impressing on his family. Invest your time and your energies in good investments. Then he goes on to say, the problem with people is firstly kina. The eye see and the heart desires. The nature of people is they want what they see. You must guard that very, very carefully. And then the taiva, the desires, unbridled desires and undisciplined desires. And then the lust for false glory. He says, do not seek the false glory. Seek true honor. Kino, envy, put your envy to mitzvahs and to Yiras HaShemayim. He used to say that a person should choose his friends who have less than he has in material wealth and more than he has in spiritual wealth, because the person wants to emulate his friends. Then he goes on to his next point, which he emphasizes in the letter and repeats in the letter 6 or 7 times. And he gives this the greatest emphasis. He says, the chet haloshon, beware of the sin of the tongue, of speaking loshon hara and vechilus, of speaking slander, bad mouthing other people, or speaking words that will incite machlekes, strife. He elaborates so much that I cannot repeat it all here, but will make mention of what he says. He says, "Mali laharich b'zeho oven achomer mikol ha'averus." Why is it necessary for me to elaborate on this sin, which is more severe than all of the averus of the Torah? Omru Chazal shekol mitzvosai v'teirosev shalodom eina maspik l'mashem aitzim v'piv. He says, heaven forbid, a person needs so many mitzvahs and so much Torah to atone for the little that he says, which one is not allowed to. He says, d'cheit haloshen ole al kula. There is no greater avera in the entire Torah, whether it's treifus or kashrus or matzah or chometz or Shabbos, than the chet haloshon. Loshon hara keneged kulam. Ad yemeisei tzorech ha'odom lishaser. He says a person in this world has to discipline himself. He has to chastise himself, he has to afflict himself, he has to deprive himself. But from what? He says, not from physical deprivations. He says, not physical affliction, physical afflictions, but in disciplining his tongue and his mouth. B'zeh ha'tshuva, and this is the greatest tshuva. V'zeh yoseh mikol tanesim v'sigufim v'olam, and this is far better than all of the fast days that one will make, and far better of all of the hardships he will endure. V'chol rega v'rega shodem chesin piv zoche b'shvilei le'or hagonu she'en malach uberye yecholim l'sha'er. Every time a person wants to say something bad about his fellow man, and he disciplines and he holds his silence, he will attain a light in the next world that is so bright and so beautiful that the angels have not seen this yet. Who is the man that wants life, that loves days and goodness? Let him guard his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking cunningness. And this will bring forgiveness for all of his averus. The sages say, he who guards his mouth from eating things that the body does not need, and his tongue from speaking that which he should not speak, he is guarding himself from great sorrows. Movis b'chaim b'yat haloshon. King Solomon, the wisest of all men, said that both death and life is in the tongue. He says, Oymi shememis atzmai bishvil dibor echot. You go to a doctor and he tells you what you have is life-threatening. We listen. He says, how is it possible that people are willing to bring danger to their lives with their tongue because they cannot hold their tongue? He beseeches his family, entire family, don't speak Loshon Hora. Guard your tongues. Do not speak Bechilus. Then he goes on to another point which he elaborates, and that is Chinuch Habonim, to educate the children. First he starts with the daughters. And he says as follows, Gambosi levakesh miitoch meod meod bivakosho gedola veatsuma ushtucha. Now he uses all types of adjectives. He says, I beseech, I ask of you, I plead with you, shetadrik es benesayach meod, bring up your daughters that will not be heard from their mouths klola curses, oaths, lies, or machlekes. Rakakol b'sholom, b'ava, b'chiba, u'benachas. You should only hear from them words of peace, of love, endearment, gentleness, and kindness. He says, I have many, many sforim that I'm leaving, bushes for him, books of morals and ethics. And many of them have a translation in Ashkenaz, in Yiddish. He says, read that to them all of the time, and especially on Shabbos. And teach them all of the time these things. Now, in the letter, he writes continuously that you have to teach the children with a soft hand and a kind hand and a gentle hand. But here, when it comes to instilling something good in them. But when it comes to a midorah, a bad quality, he writes, ala klola ushfua vekezev. If they speak lies, if they curse, if they speak loshon hara and mechilas, if they speak matlekes, take eso. You must smack them. V'leiterachim aleihem klal, and do not have compassion on them. Ki chas v'sholem b'kil kol abonim yonshu av ve'em e'od. because in the next world the parents will be held responsible. And it, particularly when it comes of Lashon Hara and Rechilas, to incite Machlekes or to speak ill about others. He writes, when it comes to teaching them in general, that you must do with, but when it comes to eradicating, to uprooting a bad and evil trait in them, and that, he says, you must have a hard hand and a heavy hand. You must use both of the ways. Then he writes with the children, and he selects three things here. He says, teach them when they eat and drink, it should be with a brocha before, a brocha afterwards, birchas hamazon, benching, v'hakol b'kavona. But, he says, with understanding and intention. Now what is he bringing out here? Generally, when we teach a child, we teach him the words. The words, he says, over as a parrot, as the chirping of a bird. God wasn't interested in that. He says, teach the children that when they eat, they first have to give thanks to who's giving them what to eat, the Baruch HaRishayna. After they eat, they have to say thank you again to the Almighty, the Baruch HaRishayna and Birchas HaMozon. And then he writes, and Krishma with Kavona, teach them how to say the Shema, but to understand what they're saying. Because that's when one pledges his allegiance to the Almighty. Then he says, V'ikra kol. But what's more important than everything, he's referring here to the children and to the daughter specifically in this paragraph. She saitsu v'chabdu esoch uli'imi. That they must learn to listen to their mother, and to honor their mother, and to honor my mother, in other words, the Baba, ulachol hagdalim bishoni mehem, and to everyone that is older than them. And he calls this ikara kol, more important than everything. He's referring here to honoring one's mother, one's grandmother, and honoring everyone that's older, their heritage. Then he speaks, he refers that with the daughters, he says it's far better that they do not socialize a lot. Far better that they stay at home. Because when they socialize, they're going to get involved in talking, and they're going to say the wrong things. And there'll be envy, and there'll be gossip, and they'll bring it home. And these things to the Gaon, this was a tragedy. And he becomes even an extreme on it. He says, it's best they should daven at home and not go to shul. He says, even better they shouldn't daven at all than to go to shul and involve themselves in talking in shul and idle chatter and Lashon Hara. And there on Shabbos v'Yom Tovim they go and they will see all the beautiful clothing, and they come home and they have envy and they start to bring it into the house. And then he tells even his wife, when you go to shul, tikatzer me'od, daven, and then come home. Because to the Gaon, this was a tremendous pitfall, a tremendous obstacle. To him, to us, Lashon Hara is Lashon Hara. To him, this was moves bechayim, this is death and life in the tongue of a person. This is what brought the Churban, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. 2 points is worthy to note here. Firstly, he's bearing down here on the daughters more than he does on the sons in regards to this. Why? I've asked this to educators and psychologists. They told me it's very simple. He's 100% right. It is the nature of young girls, unfortunately, to be cruel to each other, they told me, to be nasty to each other, to start with cliques and with envy. And this you do not find by young boys. You find other problems always, but not this. And the Gaon understood that. And he said that a young girl has to grow up to be kind, to be generous, to be soft, to be peace-loving, to be gentle, bechiba, be'ava, be'simcha, u'be'shalom. If you do not uproot this at a young age, it will stay with her. This is something for us to think about in our generation. The second thing is today we talk about the imperatives of socialization. Children must socialize, otherwise they will not grow up well. It's also something we have to think about. Is that so? Perhaps they will grow up better under the direction of good parents, rather than shoving them out into the marketplace at an early age. Rather, when the whole gist of life for young girls or young people is how to keep up with all of the neighbors and how to keep up with everything that's going on and to come together and to chatter and to talk and to socialize. But what are they talking about and what are they chattering? Yeah, different priorities than we have today. Now he goes to the sons. Yigadlei som, he starts to speak about sons, you must learn with them. But yigadlei som b'derech hayosher v'nachas, bring them up in a kind way, with a pleasantness. Keep a balamed, a teacher in the house, and do not hold back on the expenses and his fees, because a person's parnosa is set aside from one Rosh Hashanah to another Rosh Hashanah, but what he spends on teaching Torah to the children, that's not in the calculation. Then he says again, Leman Hashem, in the name of God, in the name of heaven, Tadrichem betov v'nachas, teach them kindly, with goodness. Tashkiach al bri'usam, watch over very carefully their health. They have to learn long hours. They must be healthy. They must be strong. Umezeinosam tomid shalayachsa lohem, watch what you feed them. Make sure what they're eating is good and nutritious, and do not deprive them of whatever they need for their health. Shiyilmadu mikodem, it is, incidentally, this is very important for us, because what do we allow our children to eat when it comes to nutrition? And the Gaon saw importance enough in this letter to write about it. Ushiyilmadu mikodem kol achumish, and first teach them the entire chumash. Do not go on to Mishnah, do not go on to Gemara, until they know the entire chumash regilim kemat balper, that they know it so well with so many revisions that they know it almost by heart. But al yafid aleihem, but do not make the load too heavy for them. Benachas, softly and kindly. Ki halimud einanik ba ba'odam ki im biyishuv v'nachas, because a person cannot acquire Torah unless he acquires it through a happy mode, through a pleasantness. We always ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu La'arev, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should make Torah pleasant to us. So how do you do this? A child doesn't want to learn. You've got to take the whip to him. No. He says, give him prutais. Give him money. Give him treats. give him prizes to get him to learn. And then when he learns, the Torah will capture him. And then he tells his family, always watch over this. What a father and mother have to worry about foremost is that their children should grow up with Torah and Ma'asim Tovim, Torah and deeds. He says everything else is secondary. Foremost is to have children that will be good children. What are good children? That will walk in the ways of the Almighty, fulfill the Torah, his mitzvahs and his deeds. Then he, while he's speaking of this chinuch, he addresses Hasonai, my sons-in-laws. He says, I cautioned you, teach the children, and teach them also that when they learn, they must learn Torah, not like a parrot, but again, they must learn Torah, knowing that this is the greatest desire of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that people should learn his Torah. He says, don't listen to those that say, young children, you don't have to worry about their intentions. He says, Chas v'Shalom, heaven forbid. He says, you have to, this is very important, chinuch, education, starts with young children, not with old children. He says, for example, a nut, when the shell is still green, you can remove it. When it hardens, you cannot. Chanoch hanar al pi darko, King Solomon said, that you must educate the child when he's young, and then kam ki yaskin lo yosur rimenu, and those good traits he will take with him during his entire life. And therefore also, you must teach him in his early days that when he's learning, what he's learning, who he's learning for, he has the privilege to learn the Almighty's great Torah. He says, don't listen to those people that tell you this is for older people and not for young people. And teach them Masechta Oves. There's where the ethics and the, that's the ethics of the fathers. And Oves Reb Noson, Masechta Derech Eretz. Teach them the Masechta Derech Eretz, because Derech Eretz comes before Torah. How to be a mensch. How to have proper respect and proper conduct that must come before Torah. And then he says, you yourself must give honor. He's talking to his sons-in-laws now. You must give honor to your mother-in-law, that was his wife, and to your old mother-in-law, that was his mother. Techabed me'od, give her very, very great honor. V'im kol odom tisnahig b'derech eretz v'nachas u'bekovet. And with every person, conduct yourself with the ultimate respect, the kindness, and honor. Then he goes to educating both of them, the daughters and the sons. He says the main part of education is when you teach them the Musar, it should be something which is acceptable on their heart. Again, he says, with kindness. And he says, you must teach them very well, especially if we will be zeicha to go all to Eretz Yisrael. Kisham tzorech leilech me'od b'darkei Hashem. Because a Jew has to be a different Jew in Eretz Yisrael than in the Golus. Shom paltun shel melech. That's the palace of the king. And the sages say that it's not the same if someone rebels against the king outside of the palace than inside of the palace. And therefore you have to instill in their young age all the beautiful and good traits and eradicate the bad ones. Because, here he says a great principle, Ahergo Shilton Alakol. A person is driven by routine, by training, by habit. How he's trained in his youth. The habits that his mother instills in him and that his father instills in him, this he will carry through his whole life. And in the beginning it's very difficult, but later on it becomes part and parcel of himself. He says even the Rosho, even the evil person, knows that his way is not good, but he cannot separate himself from it because he's been trained the other way. How a person will be trained in his early youth, that is how you will build your children of the future. Now he says a word or two about Shabbos. The Chabad is a Shabbos be'od kasher hoya lefonai. Give honor to Shabbos, very, very great honor. Like when I was home, about the tzamtzim klal, and don't hold back on the expenses, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives extra. What you spend for the honor of Shabbos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you extra. And be very, very careful on Shabbos not to speak Lashon Hara, or things, or idle chatter, or things which one is not allowed to speak. Because Kiddush Shabbos, the sanctity of Shabbos, is very, very great. Read this letter, he says. Read this letter every week. And especially on Shabbos, before the Suda and during the Suda. Then he says a word about Stoker, about charity. We're accustomed to try to give 10% of our wages and profits to charity. The Gaon's opinion was that one must give 20%. Leman Hashem, he says, in the name of heaven, be sure to separate 20% of all the wages, like I always commanded and instructed you, to give to the poor. Then he goes on to the study of Musar. Musar is the study of ethics and the study of morals. And he says, again, I'm leaving many sforim that have a Yiddish translation. Read them all the time, and especially on Shabbos, and teach them to the children. And the main thing is you should teach them with a kindliness, with a love, so it will go into their hearts. And Mishlei Proverbs that King Solomon wrote, he says that's the best of all. And Keheles is good. But he said, don't just read it. He says, many people learn Musar, they just read it, and it does no good. It has to be brought into one's heart. Also, he says, many people learn Musar, and then they go out into the world and they do not know the ways of the world. And he says, that's worthless. This is all, if you just read it and it doesn't go into your heart, this is the same as planting without plowing the fields. The birds will come and eat all the seed, or the winds will blow it away. Or if you put the seed and you do not build a fence around. This is like people that learn and then they go out into the world to try to achieve something, and they do not understand Elehem Avona Ben Abrius, they do not understand the ways of the world. He says, and it is worthless. One must know also the ways of the world. The final paragraph that he writes, he directs to his mother, and then to his wife. And he says as follows. Ahuvasi imi, my beloved mother, yudati she'inek tzrich l'musa shali, you don't need my instruction or my rebuke. Yudat ki tznu'at, you are a righteous woman. Afal pi kein, but nevertheless, yikru lefonayich ha'yigeres hazos. Please read this letter that I am leaving, because Heim Divrei Elakim Chayim, they are the words of the living God. And I plead with you, I beg of you, do not be upset over me, kasher hivtachtli, like you promised you wouldn't be. And im yetzah Hashem, by the will of Hashem, If I will be zeicher to come to Yerushalayim, the holy city, Eitzel Shara Shomayim, next to the Beis Hamikdash, Avakesh Ba'ade Kasher Hiptachti, I will pray for you like I have promised you. Viniske Nisra Yacht of Kulonu, and if we will merit, we will all be there together. Im Yirtze Bal Harachamin, if the Master of Compassion will desire. Now he addresses his wife. I am asking, my dear wife, please give honor to my mother, like it states in the Torah. And specifically that she is a widow. It is from the worst averas in the Torah to upset an almona, a widow. So please, and I also asked my mother that there should always be peace between you two. And one should always try to bring joy to the other. A great mitzvah for everyone is to try to bring joy one to the other. When a person gets up to heaven, one of the questions he'll be asked, did he uplift his fellow man? Did he encourage his fellow man? Did he bring him a new spirit of life and make him happy? A person is obligated to bring spirit to his fellow man, to help his fellow man, to encourage him, to make him happy. There was a Gemara that brings an Aveda Zora. One of the early sages met Eliyahu Hanavi, Elijah the prophet, and they were in a marketplace. And he asked Elijah, he says, is there anybody in the marketplace that you see that will have a great place in the world to come? And Eliyahu looks around and he says, no one. Then two people come. Eliyahu says, those two. Mamalachta. What do they do? These two, it's very strange, these two were batkonim. Batkonim. They were comedians. Why these two? Eliyahu says, go and ask them. So he went and he asked these two fellows, what do you do? He says, we come here often when we see a person depressed. We come and we make jokes with him and we make him happy again. When we see two people fighting, we come and we make jokes and we make peace between them. He went back to Eliyahu and he says, now I understand. And even if one of the households will do to the other something which is not nice, forgive them immediately. Live in peace. And also to my mother I have requested, I have pleaded that she should guide my sons and my daughters with soft words, in order that they will accept them with simcha. And to my sons and daughters I have commanded them that they must give my mother the utmost honor. And there should never be heard in the household strife or anger. It should all be in peace. The Dibnosai, and the master of all peace, he should give to you, to my sons and my daughters, the Chasonai, and my sons-in-laws, Va'achai, and to my brothers, the Chol Yisrael, and to all Yisrael, Chaim V'Sholom, light peace. Minoi Ahuvchem, from the one that loves you all, Eliyahu Ben Morena Rav Shleima Zalman Zichreinu Divrocha. This is the letter that the Vilna Gaon saw fit to write to his household upon his taking leave. And again, he fulfilled the entire Torah. But you can't write the entire Torah in a letter. So he chose carefully what he wanted to write. May we all learn from this letter what he held was important. All mitzvahs are important, but evidently he held these were even more fundamental. And may the schus of the great Gaon of Vilna, the Gaon Achosin of Vilna, stand by us here in the Golus as we await the Yeshua, and we be all be written and sealed in the book of Chaim v'Sholom. Thank you very much. A good Chodesh and a good Yor.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.